Bold. Brave. With Dr. Pam Peek.
Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and this is episode number 514 of the Bold and the Brave Her podcast. Today, I'm joined by a dear friend and colleague. His name is Ted Kyle, and many of you may already know him very, very well because of his extraordinary daily blog. And this blog, Conscious Health, really outlines the top level information we need to understand about all things obesity, diabetes, nutrition, and more. Ted is a pharmacist and healthcare innovator. He lives in Pittsburgh. By the way, Pitt is like the best show ever, the medical show. He's also a tireless advocate for people living with obesity. And he has been on the board of directors of the OAC. Tell everyone who the OAC is.
The Obesity Action Coalition. It's a patient advocacy
group.
There
you go. Absolutely. And he has an incredibly popular daily commentary, and everyone should just run on over there and grab it. It's Conscious Health, but you're going to hear more about that. And it really reaches a diverse audience of thought leaders in health and obesity all the way across the country. So, Ted, welcome on board.
Thank you so much for having me.
You know, it's been, I was just saying, the last time we saw each other, we were in a boardroom and we were bored. There were way too many hours spent that day. And I think by the end of the day, we wanted to strangle each other. But other than that, we're good. Okay.
Yep.
And all I can tell you is that I'm so happy to have you on because all heck has broken out in the obesity arena. That's what I love to call for you, a keen grasp of the obvious. And you had just done this beautiful summary interview, really about what's the script for obesity now. But before we do that, how come you got so interested in obesity and the nutrition field, given your extraordinary background?
Sure. Well, back in about 2000, I was working for GlaxoSmithKline Consumer Healthcare and had a lot of experience with helping people quit smoking. It occurred to us that there was a lot of opportunity to use those insights with how people approach health and health behavior related things in smoking and tobacco dependence to the field of weight management and obesity. And back then, it was just coming into view, really, how the trends in obesity were accelerating and really setting a threat to the health of the population here in the U.S. and really now all around the world. So I spent a lot of time getting to know the thought leaders in obesity and listening to people who had lived with obesity from a very early age. And it, the more I learned, the more I knew that this was a compelling need that was going unmet. And really, it went from there. And then when I struck off from GSK to form Conscious Health, I reached out to some of the experts in obesity and found myself to be very helpful to folks like the Obesity Society and the Obesity Action Coalition in terms of strategies to really move the field ahead.
And thank God you did. I think there needed to be a voice of advocacy out there. I think it was lacking. And as a physician, I can tell you, and you've written about this quite frequently, that as providers, we were given very little training and very little understanding about what was going on. But you know, things changed so rapidly over time. Is it almost in the blink of an eye? Suddenly we had a very, very different demographic. You wrote a blog, I believe, very, very recently about the explosive growth in extremely severe obesity. And you had some statistics here that kind of frame this
right
in a big way, right? So you said the prevalence of extremely severe obesity, which you define as a BMI of?
BMI above 50, I believe, And this is a paper that was in JAMA recently. Yeah. And it has just taken off.
Well, the numbers here just sort of give us a little framework here to work with. And that is the prevalence of extremely severe obesity grew by roughly 250% from 2001
right.
to 2023 when they were last collecting this information. But right. the next paragraph really says it all. In that same period, the prevalence of people in a, and I quote, healthy weight range dropped by 22%. So the number of people who had this healthy weight dropped by 22%. The prevalence of overweight dropped by 8%. And mild obesity rose until 2019 and appears to be leveling out.
Right.
And I think that the stats show that USA adults have an obesity level of about 41%-ish, like 40.9 or I don't know, something like that. And there you have it. So a lot has changed. And my gosh, as you sit here looking at these changes that have taken place in the demographic, changes that have also taken place in the way we are, as providers, supposed to now understand obesity, with the American Medical Association designating it as a chronic illness or a chronic disease in 2013. I don't know that memo went out to a lot of us. I think it happened and then people kept acting the same way. It's like, oh, okay, nothing happened, nothing to see here. And then now we have 40% of USA adults categorized as obese and the severely obese. What in heaven's name is going on here, Ted?
Well, I think what this reflects is the fact that, well, I'll say it simply, your genes, your biology really sets the table for obesity, and then the environment serves it up. And there are many things going on in the environment that we live in that pushes people who are biologically susceptible to obesity to a higher weight. And so as time has passed and these changes have been with us for so long, what's happened is that just about all the people who are susceptible to weight gain have been pushed up into the range of overweight and obesity. And those who are particularly susceptible keep going up and up and up. And it's not because they woke up one day and said, I would like to live with obesity or more severe obesity. I want to gain some weight. No, as a matter of fact, they put a lot of energy into trying to understand what they can do about it. But the biology that they inherited is working against them. Whereas that 25% of folks who are living at a BMI of 25 or less, that's considered to be relatively healthy, are just sitting there stable in their weight because their biology is resistant to weight gain. There's been a lot of genetic research on this, but the fact is biology sets the table and the environment serves it up. Then you have to decide what you're going to do about it.
Oh my goodness, this is a rough topic that you're the only one I thought of to kind of really lay down some foundational thoughts about it. Out there on the Her podcast land right now, as they're listening in, they're saying, oh, I fall into that obese range. I fall into that overweight range. I am so frustrated. I can't see straight. Is it all my genetics? Now let's go to that place for a moment, because you've written a lot about that.
Well, as I say, the genetics are sort of set the baseline of how susceptible a person is, and then the environment that you're living in is what changes it. When I talk about the environment changing, what's happened is our food supply has changed, and a lot gets written about that. And most people assume that it's all about the food, and certainly food is important, and the food environment we live in is important. And the food environment is more than just how much sugar is in this or that food or ultra-processed food. It's also how food is placed in our lives and how our culture incorporates food into daily routines. It's how it is marketed. And when we say marketed, it's more than just did you happen to see an ad on TV. It's everything about the marketing, the product, the placement, the promotion, and the price. It all works together to encourage us to eat more stuff. We buy bigger cars with cup holders so we can eat while we, every moment of the day. People, one of my colleagues said, remember when we could go to a meeting like that board meeting that you talked about and feel like we could survive for an hour without food?
Oh, an hour. No, not an hour. We could starve to death.
Right. And now you go to a meeting and it's just all lined up for you there. They sell food at office supply stores, for goodness sake. What is that about? But food environment has changed in many, many ways. And then you have the physical and the tech environment that keeps us inactive in a very routine way through the day. It's not about, did I go to the gym today and work out for 10 or 20 minutes? It's for the rest of the 12 hours that you're awake, how did you pass the time? Are you stuck in front of a screen? Well, a lot of us are. And then there are the chemicals and drugs that we are exposed to, really, in many cases, not through an active choice, but they modify the functioning of our metabolism. And this is things like this forever chemicals and endocrine disrupting chemicals that leach out of plastics that deposit themselves in your body and alter the way your body stores fat. That has an effect. About 20% of adults are taking drugs that actually push their weight higher. And a lot of doctors don't really think about that. They think, well, you know, you might need to control what you eat a little bit if you're taking this drug, but it adds up. And then finally, there's stress and distress. And that ranges in many different ways, from sleep disruption to, you know, work stress and other sorts of stressors. Trauma, absolutely. All those things interact and act together to push our weight to a higher level than it was when we were living in a different environment.
You sit back and you say, what are you supposed to do here? And for a long time, you and I know, oh my gosh, do we know. We came from the days of calories in, calories out, and you counted those little calories.
Right.
All, oh my goodness gracious. And exercise was supposed to be a panacea. It's not. Exercise is spectacular for your health.
Right.
And it helps put a period at the end of the sentence
right.
of everything else you're doing to basically help your weight. So eventually, you know, we got a lot of that settled down on, and it was a lot of my colleagues on, I'm on the board of the American College of Sports Medicine, and there's a lot of my colleagues there who really made it extremely clear, don't be looking to run a marathon and rule your weight for the rest of your life. It doesn't work that way. It's far more complex, as you've already said. And then come along, out of the blue, for forever, we've had some really wonky drugs.
Right.
You know, basically stuff that was speed. I mean, let's just call it what it is. It's like that stuff burned out very quickly and obviously was not sustainable. You have, to me, the word successful means sustainable. It's got to be sustainable in a healthy, non-self-destructive way. And I think we looked inside the toolbox for obesity and, you know, there were cobwebs in there. It was like nothing going on. And then out of the blue came the GLP-1ARs. Tell us all about.
These are drugs that activate an agonist, and these are in your brain. They affect your GI tract, and they serve to regulate your metabolic function. And the newer ones, semaglutide and tirzepatide, are peptides that actually interact with those receptors to help regulate weight. Now, this class of drugs has been around for quite a while, about 20 years.
It's actually over 30 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they've been very effective for managing diabetes, but more recently, they have found forms of these that are very effective for sort of recalibrating how your body stores fat and regulates your weight. And it has taken us from a world where we have only minimally effective drugs, the cobwebs that you talked about, to a place where we have drugs that are really highly, highly effective. And the discovery of these drugs really builds from a lot of basic research on obesity and understanding what the pharmacology is that regulates our body weight. So a lot of scientific learning has brought us to this point.
How has this changed the narrative? So I remember when they first showed up, celebrities, of course, were buying it at $1,000 a hit, because that's what it was costing at that time. I just saw this morning that Novo Nordisk now has reduced its price for its offering in the GLP category to $500 a month instead of $1,000. If you're working with one of the telehealth platforms now, suddenly telehealth is kind of where it's at.
Right.
And so I see this rapidly evolving over time. First, it was super expensive. Celebrities got it if they wanted to drop 10 pounds before the Oscars or, you know, whatever the issue was. And at the same time, people who were using it, it was very interesting. They were getting a lot of shaming from people like, you're cheating. What you should do is do it the right way. Now you get your little behind to the gym, work out, and eat your little lean chicken and salad, and shut the hell up. And you're like, well, wait a minute. And then the narrative for me was that, well, wait a minute now. This is a chronic disease. This has been labeled a chronic disease. So is hypertension.
Right.
So hypertension gets to have medications, but not obesity. So how does that work? And again, we're in the early phases of all this. I see a lot of the GLPs as beta, real beta, because we're going to have so much more coming forth, not just in the GLP category, but also in at least several other categories, the categories turning beige fat into brown fat and, you know, on and on and back and forth. But I saw the shaming finally go away, and then people realized that everyone who really needed it in their mind, they knew that they were obese or whatever the issue was, that they were openly talking about it now. It wasn't like no one should know where that 50 pounds was. It's like, how did she do that? Well, it's obvious. And when Oprah went public and all the rest of it. So isn't that interesting just to watch? Once again, it's like the obesity thing is always cloaked in shame.
Right. Absolutely. Well, what has happened, I mean, really, your underlying question here is, how did we get here? And I would say that having medicines that are actually highly effective, what we had before was really minimally effective. Now we have medicines that are highly effective and have an effectiveness that is starting to approach the effectiveness of metabolic surgery, gastric bypass, a gastric sleeve. That immediately had an effect on the mindset of a lot of people. So there was this big effect all at once of, oh my gosh, this is a condition that you can treat. Well, when you don't have a treatment for a condition, people will tend to deny it. They'll tend to say, well, that's not me. I just need to lose a little bit of weight. If I go to the gym, if I eat some salads, everything's going to be fine. It'll be one and done. Then I'll behave myself ever after. People said that to themselves, even though they have a lifetime of experience saying that that didn't work. But then they have a medicine. And then they say, oh, well, if you've got a solution, well, then maybe obesity really is a problem. Maybe it is a problem that I can take on. And so you have more and more people doing that. Now, part of that was like all at once and all done. The other part of it is really understanding, really coming to terms with the idea that this is a chronic condition. It's not one and done. It's not really, weight loss is not the cure for obesity. Weight loss is a way to manage obesity. But it's a marathon, not a sprint. You use these medicines to get you to a lower weight. And just like if you lower your blood pressure, when you stop taking your blood pressure medicine, it goes back up. Why would it be a surprise that your weight goes back up when you stop taking medicines that correct or adjust the metabolic function of your body so that you don't carry so much fat? You need to keep treating this condition because it is a chronic condition. We don't have a cure. We have effective drugs for managing it.
It's interesting. I don't know if you read in the Wall Street Journal about a couple of weeks ago, I was actually following this guy for a while. He wrote a really nice piece. I think it was like in the weekend section. He's one of their guys, one of their editorial guys on the West Coast. He was obese. And then he started on one of the GLPs. He dropped, I believe it was like 40-ish plus pounds. And then he just decided, you know, I don't want to keep doing this because, you know, I mean, you're injecting yourself. It's kind of like, you know, it's not like you're popping a pill, which you do for high blood pressure. Soon there will be an oral for the GLPs, but, you know, that's another topic. So this guy got down about 40 pounds and he felt fantastic, you know, and whatever. And during his descent, he was exercising more, paying more attention to how he ate, really trying to lay down a new foundation in his mind to sustain it all, right? So then he went off the medication. And the first mistake he made, for all of you out there listening who are thinking of doing that, you wean yourself off. You don't just go, bye, see ya, after you've been on this stuff for months. And then what he did was, he realized that as his appetite came back, that he was going to have to change his lifestyle even further. He would have to make up for that metabolic gap that so many of our experts talk about. When you shed that level of weight, you're different. You're metabolically different. And that has been codified by wonderful studies that have been done. Hall and other people have done this really quite well at the NIH. So then he found that he was able to drop another 20 pounds. So now he's down about 60 pounds. He looks quite fit and all the rest of it. He said he had to turn himself literally into a completely different person. How he lived his life on a day-by-day basis, planning, prepping back and forth and up and down. He just wanted to prove to himself that he learned a lot. He was just one of those mindsets, because a lot of people are like that, just didn't want to take meds forever. And I think one of the biggest lessons was, it's work. Now, it's work whether you stay on the med or not, because you still need to be paying attention to nutrition and physical activity and sleep and stress management and all the rest of it. But he literally was living that metabolic gap. You've read about it and you've written blogs about it, that you're different metabolically. And remember when Hall wrote the studies about the Biggest Losers and the rest of them, they're metabolically different.
Right. And all of those people regained all of their weight over time. They were just as committed as this gentleman that you're describing, but life has a way, and your body has a way of getting its way with you with a condition. I mean, if I've got diabetes and I need to take medicines to control my blood sugar so that I don't go blind or have to have a limb amputated, it is helpful and it is important for me to adjust my lifestyle. Nonetheless, all the good character and all of the willpower in the world is not necessarily going to keep my blood sugar in the right range for me to have a long and healthy life. And at some point, I have to face the fact that, you know what, I've got a condition that requires me to take some medicines so I don't lose toes, so that I don't have a stroke, so that I don't have the complications that diabetes brings. Obesity is a more subtle disease, but just as powerful biologically. The tough part of dealing with the new understanding of obesity is wrapping our head all the way around the notion of obesity as a chronic disease. We still, because we've been conditioned by the culture, want to think, I'm a good enough, I'm a strong enough, I'm a virtuous enough person to beat this. And I hear a lot of people saying, well, I needed a little bit of help to kickstart me on this. And now that I've gotten my weight down, I'm going to manage it the right way with diet and exercise and devote my whole life to that. And if that works for somebody, great. Many strong, and virtuous and well-disciplined individuals find out, oh, guess what? My body wins this one. If I leave this untreated, I'm going to be back where I was before. I'm going to be back at risk for a heart attack or a stroke or diabetes or liver disease or sleep apnea or kidney disease, and the list goes on.
When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the fallout that has taken place over the course of the last several years because of all of these changes. The Her Podcast is sponsored by Solaray Vitamins, Minerals, and Herbs, all rooted in nature. In addition to women's multivitamins, Solaray, S-O-L-A-R-A-Y, is presenting the new Her Life Stages products, providing support for the menstrual years, including PMS, perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause, and even libido. This integrative holistic approach has a woman's back throughout her entire life journey. To learn more about Her Life Stages, you've got options. You can run on over to your local health food store or check it out at Whole Foods, Sprouts, Amazon, or scroll over to Solaray.com and use promo code HER20 for 20% off your purchase. Women, Solaray's got your back. And we're back. All right, fallout. What am I talking about? All right, I saw the headline, you saw the headline, you already saw it coming, and so did I. Weight Watchers went down. They filed for bankruptcy. And you're saying to yourself, well, wait a minute. Weight Watchers, or I guess I was supposed to say WW, right, or whatever the hell, they went down. Are you surprised, Ted?
Not really, because Weight Watchers was a very sound behavioral framework for coping with obesity. And these were not stupid people, but it arose in a world where people said, you know what? This is not a disease that we can treat. This is a disease that we have to manage with behavior changes. And study after study after study said that there are limits to what the behavior changes can accomplish. 5 to 10% is about the best that a really disciplined, focused individual can hope to lose. That's the amount of weight reduction they can achieve. And that's not entirely satisfying to people, but it's the best that was available for a long time. Now we have medicines that can get you to 15 or 20 or 25% reduction in weight. You have metabolic surgery that can easily get you to a 30% reduction in weight. And that is a level of change that is really transformative for health and quality of life. And so that now dated philosophy of saying, oh, wait, don't cheat, don't take drugs, don't do surgery, just do it the right way with behavior, doesn't really hold up too well in light of scientific evidence. Weight Watchers did their very best to adapt, and I think they're planning to restructure, but nonetheless, there are limits to what you can accomplish with those behavior changes. Those behavior changes are helpful, but it's not all about behavior. It's about biology as much or more than it is behavior. That's why some people do whatever they want and maintain a slender body image, and other people work at it day and night and day and night and still live with obesity.
You know, other fallout that took place, well, we know that Jenny Craig's Bricks and Mortar, their retail places have all closed, but they flipped over to e-commerce.
Right.
Right. I don't know what's going on with Nutrisystem. I think that they're all e-commerce for that. So those were the big three for forever and a day, and they're all restructuring and they're all, you know, pivoting.
Right.
You know, in the face of all this. The other thing, too, correct me if I'm wrong, the total percentage of bariatric surgeries is down now because of the GLP-1s.
So I don't think the impact on metabolic surgery has really settled out yet. There was a paper recently that I wrote about that said, or an analysis by SMBS looking at data through 2023. that said, yeah, there's been a little bit of a downgrade, but it's not really quite what people are crying will be, you know, just a decimation of it. There was a paper done in JAMA Network Open that showed just a huge reduction in metabolic surgery. And then they had to correct it and say, oops, we kind of exaggerated that. And they quietly corrected it. There is a recalibration. But what I will say is that I think going forward, there will continue to be a role for metabolic surgery. There will be more options for obesity medicines. And together, along with dietary and physical activity interventions, it will form a whole of a comprehensive approach to obesity care.
Sort of piling onto this, as we're looking at changes that have taken place over the last probably 5 years now, I'm kind of looking at 2020 and then going forward, even though we don't have all the definitive data from 2024 yet. You know, people who walked around said, you know, body positivity.
Right.
And healthy at any weight.
Right.
All right. Where'd we go with the healthy at any weight crowd?
Well, they will tell you that there's a difference between body positivity and fat acceptance and health at every size. Those all have different nuances. But embedded in those various concepts were a lot of good ideas that, frankly, I agree with a lot of it. Where they were sort of trying to create an alternate reality is when there was the case made that obesity isn't really a thing, that obesity is not a real health condition, that obesity does not ultimately harm your health. And now when you have randomized placebo-controlled trials that show
golden standards,
right, and show when you treat obesity, you prevent the complications that are associated with obesity, strokes, heart attacks, premature death. And that's the difference that having these highly effective medicines has made. It's tough to do a randomized controlled trial of surgery. And so we had data that was suggestive of those kinds of benefits before we had it for medicines. But with the medicines, you could do a placebo-controlled randomized control trial that remove any doubt that if you treat obesity, you will live a healthier life.
So, Ted, I'm a body composition person.
Right.
I like to look under the hood. Okay, you can make that car look as pretty as can be, but if it's got a nothing burger for an engine, we're not going anywhere. And so I'm all about looking at muscle as well as fat, you know, and clearly bone too, it gets thrown in there. Really looking at the quality of a body, because that's the critical, essential item that seems to be missing from a lot of the work that has been done. And one of the biggest boo-boos the GLP pharma companies did was understanding that when they submitted their drug information to the FDA, the primary outcome was weight reduction. It wasn't changes in body composition. But what they found was that people were losing a boatload of muscle too. A classic individual who, let's just say, yeah, they're 50 pounds over and they just decide to drop weight with doing more exercise, cleaning up their eating, whatever. Let's just say they drop the weight. 25% of that is on average muscle, just naturally. Why? Right. Well, duh, you don't have to be hoisting an extra 50 pounds around. And if you doubt me, go ahead and put on a 50-pound vest and tell me how you feel trying to get out of a chair.
Right.
So it's important to know that all of that is just the genius of nature. You know, we're just adapting now to less weight, and right, that's all good. But with the GLPs, it was found to be 40% or even greater for a lot of reasons. One is people were not weightlifting. They weren't eating enough protein. They were eating very little food. They were basically lost in the desert when they were put on the GLPs because there really wasn't an infrastructure with guidance and counseling that included everything from nutrition to sleep to stress to exercise and the rest of it. So when I'm looking at all of that, right now and really saying to myself, it's really all about body composition, really trying to create a beautiful, wonderful, fantastic body that just rocks and rolls. What you find is that there's a diverse audience out there. And if you look at that populace, there's a lot of variability. So a rail thin stick figure is not the goal and never has been. Instead, it's just the healthiest level of you can achieve, whatever that looks like, one way or the other. And I think right now we're in a place of, we have so many people so far off track. And now, because of new tools in the toolbox, we're trying to give them what kind of a goal to achieve, right? Where are we going with that? And that's why I brought up the body positivity thing and the rest of it, because for a while it was like, you know, we're all good, everything's fine, you don't have to really drop the weight, you know, it's all good. Well, that's changed, obviously, as you've said so well, because obesity is indeed a chronic disease and it needs to be honored and respected as such. But now what's the goal? What can someone actually think to themselves is a realistic expectation now that they have the new tools in the toolbox?
Everything that you've said there is really interesting. And to answer your question directly, what should the goal be? The smartest obesity medicine physicians that I know who devote their careers to understanding this will give you a pretty simple answer. I'm not going to tell you what your goal should be, because everyone is different. Everyone starts from a different place. Everyone is living in a different body. You said something about the best version of yourself that you can be. You know, maybe God knows what that is. And sometimes I know what that is for my body, or maybe I don't. But figuring it out is a journey for sure. It's an important question to ask, what are your goals? And the best obesity medicine physicians that I know deal with that as a question and a dialogue and an ongoing subject to address. Well, what are your goals right now? Let's talk about that. Let's agree on what your goals are. Let's approach this as a shared decision that we're making as to where we want to go with this. Now, some of the other questions that you asked, how are these medicines affecting body composition? And was it a mistake to base the approval of them on weight loss? Those are important questions. So far as the basis for the approvals, FDA has all of this guidance that says, here is the best guidance that we can give you for showing that your drugs are helpful and beneficial. And that involved by FDA a lot of emphasis on percentage weight loss. People do pay attention to body composition, and in general, people who are taking these medicines do improve their body composition, but they do tend to lose muscle. As you say, this is going to require more thinking when we get results from trials of drugs like the combination of bimagrumab and tirzepatide, which bimagrumab doesn't just make you lose weight, it causes you to gain a bit of muscle. What is the impact of that on health? And what does that mean for these guidelines that are based solely on an assumption that the goal is weight loss? These things are going to evolve just like they've been evolving for decades now. We're going to see a whole lot of change going forward. People are paying attention to body composition. And another thing related to body composition is near and dear to my heart, which is as you get older, guess what? You lose muscle mass, and that has an effect on health. And I can see I'm living with shifts in my body composition that are not due to anything I'm doing differently. They are in spite of what I'm doing. They are because that's what my body's doing. That is the biology that I have inherited. And figuring out what to do about that is something that I give a lot of thought to.
So when I asked the question about goal, I did that deliberately. And the reason why is because the goal is to be your healthiest self. is to be able to create a self, mind and body, that can optimize your health span, your ability to be able to rock and roll and have a robust life, get up those stairs at the Parthenon when you go to Greece and all the rest of it, and really enjoy life. And the thing is, most people are so off track, they don't even know what that even looks like. The goal then is to take every single day and stay as mindful as you can and as self-compassionate as you can, as you strive to be able to eat well, as you strive to remain physically active. Notice I didn't say the E word, exercise. I said just stay physically active for people who break out in sweats when I say exercise, literally sweats, and address many of these other lifestyle issues. The issue of goal was old-fashioned. It used to, remember the Weight Watchers stuff? It was like, your goal is 121 pounds. Like, where the hell did that come from? Like, how do you know me? Oh, that's right. It's just these stupid tables that were based upon men's weight in the 1950s. I think we've moved far away from that. All I ask for people to do is take the first step toward optimizing their health and well-being. And there are some really basic foundational things you can do to be able to achieve that. You've intonated that as well. And with regard to body composition, I got to tell you, right, in the seventh decade of life, in your 60s, I don't care if you're an Olympian, a master swimmer, or whatever you are, you're going to drop some lean body mass. It's one of the first truly age-related changes that takes place in body composition. In other words, many other issues are just issues of disuse. So you drop a boatload of muscle because you haven't been using it, just sit in a couch, whatever. But if you're just rocking and rolling and trying to do the best you can, just like you said, that despite your best efforts, you're still going to do that. And then you as a man are continuing on a decade by decade basis to drop testosterone. So your testosterone levels continue to decline. And so that nice, you know, six pack we once had, right, Ted? Suddenly it's like, okay. Real special. And women, meanwhile, are running into their little issues with not one, but three hormones. Honey, if we're going to screw this up, let's just do it, you know, with three hormones. Why screw around with just one? Leave the testosterone to the guys. We'll mess this up with testosterone, progesterone, and estrogen, and try desperately to make some sense of what we do as we go forward. It's so interesting. We're addressing the Her Podcast audience right now. What's the hope? Do you see hope over the course of the next year?
There will be a lot of changes that go beyond just a year. But what I see in the future is more options. There will be more options coming into the marketplace for treatment just in the next year. There will be more scale for delivering care. And that's something we desperately need. And having more scale for delivering care, you mentioned telemedicine, and I think telemedicine, telehealth will be a part of that. But that means more access to care. And then in the background, the more profound trend and profoundly important trend is the trend toward less bias, towards less of an assumption that this is something that you chose rather than this is something that we face and that we can deal with. All of those four things are a good reason for hope for the future that we'll be doing better with obesity than we have in the past.
We also have more providers at all levels,
yep,
who are taking the certifications,
right,
and extra education,
right,
to be able to do, as it were, obesity medicine.
Right.
So now it's a thing. It's not just a thing as a chronic disease. It's a thing as an actual specialty. And now we have these clinics and group practices and such that really spend time honoring, destigmatizing, and trying to provide the best care possible to people who clearly have some issues here. What are the options? What's the best option for me? What are my goals? Who am I? And, you know, if you haven't been on 600 diets during your lifetime, you're just not red-blooded American. Right. Yeah, it's just, do you remember some of the early studies? It was hysterical. This was done at the Pennington Institute. Frank Greenway is one of my best friends. We published together, and they tried to put together a study one day, and you had to, the inclusion criteria was you absolutely could not have been on any diet prior to this, right? You have to come in cleaner. They could not find a single person to recruit. Everybody showed up with, you know, they've been on Weight Watchers, Jenny Craig, you know, all the rest of it, and made stuff that they made up as they went along, and they couldn't find anyone. Everyone has gone through such trials and tribulations. All right, being a little general, maybe not everyone, but I would say a majority of people have gone through trials and tribulations. Now they reach a place where they're not quite sure about, well, you know, what can I say? If there's any hope. And I think what you've just said and what we've been discussing is the fact that it's a brand new day. We have a chronic disease. It's acknowledged. It's now getting more respect. It's now getting more certified providers. It's now getting less shame, because the shame's still there. You know that as well as I do, Ted. But it's less shame, less stigma, and great research with top-level investigators coming through the pipeline. And I think that that just warms my researcher's heart, to say the least. So for all of you out there struggling, there is hope. And it's always going to be an integrative, comprehensive approach. It has to be. There's no more just popping a pill or taking an injection and just not paying attention to all the other elements that are critical to being able to define your success. Does that make sense, Ted?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And when you talk about more providers, that's exactly what I mean when I say we can look forward to more scale for delivering care.
I hope it's cheaper too.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, that's been a real thorn in my side. Yep. You know, when I saw my little eye-popping numbers coming out of the pharma people, I wanted to just fly over to wherever they are in Europe and just give them a slap.
Yep.
Like, how dare you? You know, would you do that with someone with high blood pressure where, you know, you spend $30 per month on good RX? Come on, give me a break. And this is something that's going to implicate cardiovascular disease, let alone blood pressure and the rest of it. So come on, we can do so much better than that. One last word from you, Ted. Can you give everyone a little nugget of, you know, they're sitting there like, can I really do this? Can I do this? What would you tell them?
What I would tell them is to find a provider, someone who understands obesity, to work with them, to partner with them for good science-based medical care for this condition. This is not something that you've chosen. This is not something you've done for yourself. This is a medical condition that a medical provider can help you with, period. And if they can't help you with it, well, then they don't understand the condition.
In which case, go find somebody who does.
Exactly.
And someone who's going to honor you with enough time to discuss it when you show up.
Yep.
Because this is not one of those hit and misses. It's not a strep throat, right? A penicillin, RX, and you're out of there. This is your life, for crying out loud. This is why I had you on. Ted, you are amazing. Tell everyone how they can sign up for your fabulous daily article.
All you have to do is go over to Conscien Health, conscienhealth.org. You can subscribe through your email. You can follow me on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, X, and Blue Sky, whatever, wherever you want. And learn there whatever I'm carrying on about on this day. And I welcome the folks who take the trouble to read what I write.
All I can say is I look forward to it every single morning. It's my daily hit for me, and I appreciate it. I appreciate you, Ted, for all the work you've done over the many years to try to advocate for people who do have the chronic disease of obesity.
Thank you so much for having me.
And I want to give another shout out to my sponsors, Solaray Vitamins, Minerals, and Herbs Rooted in Nature, and the new Her Life Stages products. Scope them out at solaray.com. And now take a moment, leave us a review, because we love to hear from you. Feedback's all absolutely what it's about. So this has been a production of Podcast Health. And I got a reminder for you. You know, your time in this world may be limited, but the things you can do with that time are not. So how about getting on out there and carpe diem? Seize the day, everyone. Thanks so much.